Ducks Unlimited Canada works with landowners and other conservation-minded partners to improve outcomes for communities and wildlife. Supporting vital ecosystems which contribute to water quality and quantity, soil health, support agriculture and economy, mitigate severe weather events, and provide opportunities for recreational access to nature. Together, we are unlimited. Learn more about programs and partnerships at ducks.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
Hi, I'm Andre Goulet. You're listening to Harbinger Showcase. Harbinger Showcase is a weekly podcast syndicated to community and campus radio, including CITR and Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Victoria's CFUV, CIVL in Abbotsford, CKUW and CJUM in Winnipeg, CJTM in Toronto, at Montreal's CKUT, and at CJBU in Sydney, Nova Scotia, and featuring highlights from the country's favorite progressive podcast community. Since launching in 2020, the Harbinger Media Network's become Canada's number one listener-supported nonprofit podcast network, featuring 80 shows exploring politics, society, and culture from progressive perspective. Find out more about the community and subscribe to our weekly newsletter at harbingermedianetwork.com. On this episode, we explain why increasing wages and capping rent is an investment in sustainable business on the Broadband Institute's perspectives. Unpack how Israel and the U.S. wage war on domestic human rights and the U.N.-based international legal order on Green Plant Monitor, and make the connection between war abroad and struggles against racism at home on Free City Radio. But first, this episode of Harbinger Showcase is brought to you by the Canadian journalism community Unrigged. Launched in November 2023, Unrigged.ca is your one-stop website highlighting the latest in socially and politically progressive journalism, podcasts, and videos from 27 publishers across the country, like Briar Patch Magazine in Regina, The Independent in St. John's, the investigative journalism publisher The Rover in Montreal, The Grind newspaper in Toronto, and national news outlets like The Maple, The Breach, and Press Progress, and 20 more. Check it out now at Unrigged.ca. And since launching in May 2023, Perspectives, a journal of political economy and social democracy, has brought left-wing inquiry into public debates for building a more just and equitable Canada, courtesy of the Broadbent Institute with host Clem Nokos in Toronto. On this full-length presentation of a new episode, Better Way Alliance economist Liliana Camacho explains why, while rising costs are squeezing businesses, increasing wages and capping rent aren't a problem, but are actually an investment in sustainable business. Now, here's the show.
But when the rent is increasing 60% year over year or 200% year over year, it's not inconvenient. That's a death sentence for a small business. So when we talk about rent reform, we're talking about making the rent costs more affordable. We're talking about making appropriate spaces more accessible to local business owners at a price that they can pay.
Welcome to Perspectives, a Canadian journal of political economy and social democracy. I'm Clement Nokos, editor of Perspectives Journal and research director at the Broadbent Institute. The price of rent is too damn high, but you might be surprised that it's not just out of control for housing. Businesses are also counting the cost of high rent for their own shops, for the wage increases needed to retain their workers, and for their own customers. As discussed in Perspectives Journal number 2, increases in minimum wages have a huge spillover effect on incomes across the board, but it also has the effect of generating more economic activity and productivity as a result. Some small and medium-sized businesses recognize the benefits of rent controls and wage hikes and are looking to push these policies for a thriving economy. To talk about what needs to be done for better business, I'm joined today by Liliana Camacho, economist for the Better Way Alliance, a network of forward-thinking business leaders advocating for fair wages, better labor protections, and a more sustainable economy. Liliana, welcome to the Perspectives Journal podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So the Better Way Alliance advocates for fair wages. We know that increasing minimum wages can have a cascading effect, lifting up other wages across workplaces and whole sectors. But what else does recent research say about the impact of higher minimum wages on businesses and the economy?
So the research is clear about one thing, And that's that when workers earn more, there's a ripple effect in the community. That extends to well-being, adequate shelter, job security, and reduced income inequality. Raising the minimum wage doesn't just help those earning at the bottom. It also has a ripple effect that affects people earning just a bit more than that minimum wage. In fact, research from 2024 shows that a higher minimum wage directly benefits three times as many people working at that minimum wage. In other words, when the wage floor rises, it lifts workers up just above that threshold too. That affects something even more powerful, and that's income inequality. So when minimum wages are stagnant for years, the gap between top earners and low earners widens. Executives see their pay grow while frontline workers struggle to keep up. But when the legislated minimum wage rises, that gap between executive pay and frontline pay shrinks. That means more working people can access things like housing, food, daily expenses without relying on credit cards or having to cut essentials. In those situations, we don't have this super high earning class that is able to afford a life of luxury while others are in encampments in the local park. It's a much more balanced community with less stress on social services paid by taxpayers. So to bring this conversation to businesses, naturally, because I'm from a business association, you might ask, can businesses afford to pay higher minimum wages? And that's a fair question today, given the prices of everything around us rising. So there's this myth out there floating around that higher wages hurt small businesses, but data actually tells a different story. Higher wages boosts business productivity. This is how it happens. When employees are paid fairly, they're more likely to stay at their employer, more likely to take pride in their work, and motivated to contribute their best to their employer. That means better customer service, better operations, team members who can train and mentor others, a better experience overall, and less turnover that costs thousands of dollars. It's a cost saving on one end and more revenue on the other. And those higher wages come back to benefit the small businesses as well. This is through something called the multiplier effect. In a local business where a worker lives in the community where they work, their wages circulate 2 to 4 times within the local community. So the pay rise doesn't sit in a distant corporate office somewhere. It's actually spent at local grocery stores, restaurants, and community spaces. And that translates to more revenue for the businesses in that community. It's why GDP grows following a legislated minimum wage increase. And then everybody benefits through job creation. A business with more income can support a bigger payroll, and that makes them more money. And a job is one less person unemployed or someone getting skills training opportunities to help them be more economically productive. In 2018, Ontario raised its minimum wage, and the number of full-time jobs actually increased while job quality improved. So we know that businesses can pay more than the minimum wage, and many choose to do so. Certainly the ones in our network and the Better Way Alliance pay more by default. But it is much harder to do that today than ever before because businesses are being squeezed from multiple directions. We know retail rents in Toronto, so that's rent for retail spaces, skyrocketed. They went from $18 per square foot in 2020 to $30 per square foot in 2023. And then in just 1 year, between 2023 and 2024, they rose another $18 per square foot. Then there's insurance costs that have become very expensive, and it's very difficult for small businesses to afford adequate insurance. And finally, housing costs are outpacing wage growth. So it means that workers have less disposable income to spend at local businesses. At the Better Way Alliance, we are doing advocacy work around better wages, but not just that. We're also doing advocacy around rent because we believe they go hand in hand to achieve our bigger goals, like supporting new jobs with better pay and better working conditions.
And so, like you said, the cost of living keeps rising. And it's clear, you know, given the evidence, that minimum wage increases are one way to try and keep up with that rising price of everything. But have you seen this actually happening? Are wages rising to meet that increase in the cost of living? Or are workers, do you see in businesses across Canada, are they falling further behind?
Most of us have this feeling, right? Prices are going up when we have to pay our rent bill or our grocery bill, or maybe we're thinking twice before sending the kids to an after-school club. But research has shown it's not just a feeling. Prices are going up, which in and of itself isn't a problem. But the problem is that wages are not rising at the same pace. What is the data telling us? The Ontario Living Wage Network calculates the hourly wage that a worker needs just to cover the basics. So a living wage covers food, rent, transportation, and medical expenses. The gap between this wage and the legislated minimum wage is wider than ever before. The living wage that I'm talking about, it's calculated by city. So in Toronto, where I'm from, the living wage is $26 an hour, while the minimum wage is $17.20 per hour. So that's nearly a $10 per hour shortfall. In 1 month, if you're working 40 hours a week, you're $150 short on your bills. And in a year, you'd be $2,000 behind. And good luck if you had any sort of existing debt or close to retirement. In fact, in 2023 and 2024, there were several stories in the news about the use of food banks by people earning full-time salaries. When people that are working 40 hours a week can't afford food, it's an indication that something is broken. Food bank usage is also very high for students and seniors. And it's not just minimum wage earners who are struggling. The wages across the board have stagnated, except for the very highest earners. This is the wage gap that I was referring to before. In particular, housing costs have risen 4 times faster than wages have risen across Canada. So owning a home or paying rent for an apartment or a house that's appropriate for the family's needs is becoming less and less affordable, even for office workers, teachers, and healthcare professionals. We've heard that this is forcing people to delay major life decisions like moving out or starting a family because they just can't afford it. It's a big blow to our business community. I'm not talking about the big corporations. I'm talking about the small and medium businesses that drive Canada's economy. So Clement, in case the audience doesn't know, small and medium-sized enterprises, or SMEs, make up 97% of the employer base in Canada. So SMEs really are the engine of the Canadian economy. So if we think about stagnant wages and what happens to these SMEs, the majority of the Canadian economy, when people's incomes don't keep up with the cost of living, it means that workers are spending every little bit of their income, but in reality, it amounts to relatively less money being spent in the economy. We just can't afford as much. So for a business, it means you have fewer customers. Perhaps, you know, you have the small business has to charge maybe $2 more for a certain good than is on Amazon. But that worker is stretched so thin that they're going to go spend it on Amazon because every little bit helps. Amazon's revenue goes to Jeff Bezos and big shareholders, and a little to you or me or our parents who have some money in Amazon for their nest egg. But mostly it goes to Vanguard and BlackRock and these huge institutions with enormous amounts of wealth, none of which are in our local neighborhood. None of that wealth is spent in the local stores. That means there's lower local spending. Businesses are forced to cut back hours or, in severe cases, lay some workers off. And that starts this cycle of decline in the local economy. Then you have fewer workers who are able to earn enough to afford to live near their job. So these workers start to move away. Maybe they're moving 45 minutes out of town, but then their daily commute starts to become too cumbersome. They might find another job closer to where they live. Or what's happening is that many are turning to precarious jobs like driving for Uber, or driving for Skip the Dishes. And these are corporations that don't even provide proper employment status, let alone a dependable income. So in the end, our urban centers that used to provide these decent jobs for lots of different kinds of workers are gutted. And the storefronts are then bought up by developers who build small condos that are inadequate for family housing needs. And the retail ground floor is filled with large format stores that can pay a 10-year lease, for example, a Shoppers Drug Mart or a Rexall or dentists. The streetscapes become less attractive. Cities are not as walkable. We don't have these benefits like reduced loneliness and sense of belonging. So I'm not actually a negative person. I try and be positive. And at the BWA, we try and look for solutions. So that's why we're advocating for things like affordable rent, affordable insurance, so that businesses can afford to pay higher wages and help workers afford life in their city, afford their housing, and stop the slide of rising costs of living.
So that's just it. Like, the housing crisis is a major concern across Canada for individuals, families, and, like you said, small businesses. But how does the Better Way Alliance then view rent control as part of the affordability solution?
I'll explain the problem a little bit about the rents first, and then I can talk about the solutions. Rising rents and housing costs have a detrimental effect on households and businesses. It's like a double squeeze. On one hand, you have workers who are struggling to pay rent at home. On the other hand, you have businesses who are struggling to pay rent on their storefronts. Workers are spending an ever-growing share of their income just to keep a roof over their head. And something similar is happening with businesses, especially the small independent ones. There's no regulation, actually, for businesses on the amounts that rents can rise for commercial spaces. This is unlike residential buildings. In Toronto, this has translated to a 60% increase in the rent price for retail stores, but that 60% is an average. We know of individual businesses who are facing 200% and 300% rent increases between their lease terms. Thus begins the spiral that happens when a business gets hit with double-digit to triple-digit rent increases. The business can't pay the workers because their budgets are eaten up by rent. Workers move out and they take on these precarious jobs. The business is left with a declining workforce, people that they need to bring into their store to operate. So they might choose to move or close. And when they do that, they take jobs with them. And as we said, it leaves behind these empty storefronts, which developers have come in and swooped up. So developers need cash flow to make their building costs work. That means that they're going to be building a lot of small units that are not suitable for a family and a lot of large format commercial spaces at the bottom. So instead of having the little cozy cafe, you have an LCBO, a Rexall, a dentist's office. It's the only feasible way for the developers to make their cost of building work based on the charges for building in the city. So when we talk about rent reform, we're talking about making the rent costs more affordable. We're talking about making appropriate spaces more accessible to local business owners at a price that they can pay. We aren't talking about preventing landlords from making a profit. We are business owners ourselves at the BWA. But when the rent is increasing 60% year over year or 200% year over year, it's not inconvenient. That's a death sentence for a small business. The specific things that we're advocating for are focusing on creating fairness and predictability and stabilizing costs for businesses so that they can invest in growth and jobs that matter. The commercial rent in the province falls under Ontario's Commercial Tenancy Act. The last time that this was updated was in 1990. So there are specific things that we are advocating to change. Firstly, we want to start with a standard lease agreement. We want a document that's a few pages long to create clarity about what to expect in a lease. This is especially important for small businesses with few resources and immigrant entrepreneurs who are unfamiliar with the rent landscape. So at the moment, inexperienced entrepreneurs and newcomers, they're signing away their future in a 60-page contract that they just don't have the resources to read. Secondly, we're advocating for a well-funded dispute resolution system so that tenants and landlords are not stuck in costly legal battles. Again, a cash drain. We're proposing rent caps for commercial spaces so that rent increases remain predictable and manageable. They'll still allow the landlord to make a fair return. Again, this is about preventing businesses from going under because of a 60% rent increase. It allows them to do some long-term planning and invest in their payroll. And then finally, under the current regulation, if a tenant covers a repair cost that the landlord is responsible for, the landlord will owe them money. But the tenant is still required to pay full rent or they'll get evicted. So we're advocating for the right to withhold rent without eviction until landlords repay what they owe. These proposals are just part of the solution. We know that there are other barriers, other contributors to the housing crisis and to the rent crisis. There's development charges and property taxes and zoning laws that are all kind of making this a big storm. But BWA's research with small businesses indicates that updating the Commercial Tenancy Act would be a big help in the rent crisis by making our economy more stable.
And so you touched on this, that there is something of a role that businesses can play in advocating for things like stronger tenant protections. We've talked about this on Perspectives before, having tenant activists talk about, you know, the need to organize in order to fight back against, you know, some of these landlord practices that are, you know, exploitative and profiteering on the backs of people whose wages aren't rising at a similar rate. Can you tell us how does affordable housing impact both business owners and the workforce? And what do you think businesses can do to play a role in advocating for affordable housing?
Business owners, especially the ones in our network that are so employee focused, know that their success is directly linked to their employees. That means employees living close enough to get to their workplace. Businesses have actually seen their workforce shrink, especially in lower paying sectors like tourism. So in tourism, it's a traditionally lower paying industry. Workers are now moving out of Toronto. The ones that are running tours in Toronto cannot afford to live in Toronto anymore. It's happening in other cities where gentrification is happening, urban spaces all over. It's not just the big city. Rising rents are preventing people from coming to work. They're preventing people from taking these jobs that are really focused on providing services that people still value. And it's not about the jobs not being a valuable part of our economy. It's about costs. For businesses, this means lower productivity at a time when productivity is a problem in Canada. We have lower productivity rates compared to our peers in Europe and in America. We struggle to attract top talent. We can't retain them as well when cash is spent on our rent increases, as opposed to investing in the workforce. This all also affects the vibrancy and the safety of our neighborhoods and the ability for our cities to provide services that support people's health, social interaction, walkable, bikeable cities. Businesses pay taxes, they invest directly into these things. So when businesses move out or close down, it hurts our communities. You ask what a business owner can do, and we believe that they can play a very effective role in improving Canada's rent and housing landscape. The BWA has an active network of business owners that speak directly with their MPPs to communicate their experiences with rent and housing, both on the business side and on the worker availability side. We have found that MPPs are just unfamiliar with the issue. These stories coming directly from the mouths of the business owners in their constituency makes the issue real for politicians. The business owners are also great at writing op-eds that bring the issue alive for regular Canadians, you know, readers of the media. The BWA, for example, we actively pitch these pieces to the media. We have a pretty good success rate of getting picked up. And all this helps politicians see how urgent this issue is for the health of our communities and the quality of life for Canadians.
And just to wrap up, I mean, we just discussed a load of different policy ideas, policy proposals that could help businesses and workers live a better life, to build a better, good society. But if you could push for one policy change right now, you know, there's elections going on at the time of recording in Ontario, soon to be a federal election coming up this spring. What do you want to see policymakers propose to support both fair wages and affordable housing? What's the one tool you'd like to see policymakers implement?
In Ontario, on the provincial level, we believe the biggest benefit would be to provide some stability and fairness around cost increases for small business tenants. This would be a major contribution because it means businesses can plan ahead and then they can invest in wage increases. Higher wages just can't happen when a business can't afford it. Given that there is no regulation around rent caps at the moment, businesses have to withhold their investment decisions. They can't make these long-term changes and pay a rent hike because they need cash on hand just in case they have a rent increase or have to cover a repair cost. So some stability around costs and predictability around rental costs means that they can make these spending decisions, including higher payroll investments. That workforce, they have a higher wage. They're able to afford more adequate spaces to live. They can live in the communities where they work. And as we discussed in the podcast, that means that there's greater economic activity. There's a more resilient neighborhood. Wealth exists right now in businesses, but with these rent increases, it's just being funneled to these unproductive places instead of adding value to the people and the spaces that matter within the neighborhood.
Liliana Camacho, thank you for joining me on the Perspectives Journal podcast.
Thanks so much, Clement. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
That was Liliana Camacho, economist for the Better Way Alliance. And if you like this interview, share and subscribe to Perspectives, a Canadian journal of political economy and social democracy on all major podcast platforms, as well as Press Progress's award-winning Sources podcast that digs deeper into the news stories you won't find in the major papers. The Perspectives Journal podcast and Sources are proud members of the Harbinger Media Network, Canada's progressive podcast community. You can read more in Perspectives Journal, a publication of the Broadbent Institute, by visiting perspectivesjournal.ca.
That was a presentation of a recent episode of The Perspectives, a Journal of Political Economy and Social Democracy podcast. Find out more at perspectivesjournal.ca, at broadbentinstitute.ca, and at harbingermedianetwork.com. Coming up next. Broadcasting since 2016, Green Planet Monitor features interviews on global environment, development, science, and social justice, hosted by longtime Canadian public radio journalist David Kattenberg in Amsterdam. On this highlight from a new episode, David speaks with Sydney, Australia-based scholar and UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Development, Dr. Surya Deva, for a conversation exploring how Israel and the United States are waging war on domestic rights at home and the UN-based legal order internationally. Now, here's the show.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, gender-based Israeli violence and extermination in Gaza, human rights abuse and corporate takeover in the United States. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. As Israel shreds the laws of war and human rights in Gaza, on the other side of the planet, its conjoined twin is waging war on both domestic human rights and the UN-based international legal order. The new administration must recommit to human rights at home and abroad, a large group of human rights experts declared in a report issued on February 27th. Among the Trump administration acts red flags by the UN experts: threats to reclaim the Panama Canal, annex Greenland, and own Gaza, its extortionate demands on Ukraine for its critical minerals, its withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accords, from the UN Human Rights Council and World Health Organization, its sanctions against the International Criminal Court, and, back in the USA, its firing of justice officials, its failure to comply with court orders, the elimination of diversity, equity, and inclusiveness programs, demonization of transgender people, persecution and forced deportation of migrants, threats to journalists, students, and freedom of expression, censoring and removal of public information, and, here things get scary, as if this hasn't been going on for years, forever, the corporate capture of the U.S. government. The GPM reached out to one of the report's authors, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Development, Surya Deva. This is really scary stuff. It's kind of shocking. And your statement really paints a really, really frightening picture, doesn't it?
I mean, we are merely the mirror of what is happening. So we are not creating something. We are merely trying to connect the dots. And our role as independent human rights experts is to predict what is likely to happen, where things are going. And we are seriously concerned that the developments that have taken place in the U.S. under the current administration are seriously undermining the human rights ecosystem. That is the term I would like to use. So it's not about targeting one or two human rights. They're trying to target the entire human rights ecosystem in terms of the norms, principles, institutions. And it is happening at the both domestic level within the US as well as at the international level. So whether this is about dismantling DEI policies, targeting migrants in very inhumane manner, or kind of creating a very negative image of migrants, or the gender regression that we are witnessing in the US and all that. So this is definitely quite a serious concern. It looks very gloomy, definitely, especially because the world would expect US to do better, considering the historical context, because US as a country played a key role in building the current human rights system. Whether it is about the UN Charter or Universal Declaration of Human Rights or all the institutions. Of course, that record is not without failings, but no country is perfect. But US has played this positive part. And now we see that these developments together are definitely going in a very regressive directions. And that is our concern.
I mean, one doesn't really have to look farther than the situation currently prevailing in Gaza and the occupied West Bank to conclude that there is no rule of law in the world today. Israel and the United States have, I want to say single-handedly, of course, it's not only Israel and the United States, you just look at a whole lot of